goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What is up, Bison Nation? This is your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of the Bison Report on 24/7 Sports. Recording this on a Victory Monday. You're probably going to get it on a Tuesday, but we would like to just kind of roll right into the news. Carson Schoening, the center, the new center, you know, after so many years with Tanner Volson, was named the Missouri Valley's Offensive Lineman of the Week after his outstanding play. And honestly, Carson has played really well for 2 weeks. He had a tough nose tackle matchup at Illinois State, and then really played well against Northern Iowa on Saturday. And punter Garrett Wagner was named the special teamer of the week in the Valley as well, with, you know, a punt average over 50 this week. And field position did play a key role in that game early. The 46-14 final score might not make you think that way, but early on, that was certainly a big-time deal, the field position battle. A very little bit of injury news. Things really seemed to go well from an injury perspective for the Bison on Saturday. Barty Ogbu is not likely to play, and Tony Pierce had a little bit of a hamstring issue on Saturday. So all of a sudden, the defensive ends are getting a little bit thin with Brandon Cook out for the season, and Barty and Tony struggling a little bit with some lower body issues. But as far as we know, there's no immediate comeback, you know, or call up really for a defensive end. And then there was a really loud something that went on just outside the locker room as we were kind of walking into the post game press conference. A big celebration sort of erupted, and that's because Trey Lance's former teammate Trey Steinbach committed to North Dakota State immediately following the game. Trey plays tight end and linebacker for Marshall, Minnesota, which of course is where Trey Lance is from, and the Bison are going to hang some weight on that 6'4" frame and move him to defensive end. So he's going to probably get after Trey a little bit in practice, but you know, number 5 is going to be wearing that red jersey, that is for sure. I actually had a chance to catch up with Trey immediately after signing. He was up on an official visit and had been at an official visit, actually, or an unofficial, with South Dakota State the weekend prior. So a big, big win for NDSU to pull Trey away from the Jacks just 7 days after his official visit to Brookings. And we're going to play that interview for you guys right now. All right, with Marshall, what are we going to call you here? Defensive end, Trey Steinbach, or what are you playing, Marshall?
I play linebacker and tight end, but NDSU is recruiting me as a DN.
Okay, so they're gonna. How tall are you? Are they gonna try and hang a little bit of weight on you?
Yeah, I'm 6'4".
Okay, and you must have obviously then played with the quarterback Trey Lance. Talk about a little bit of what role he had in your recruitment and how excited you maybe are to team back up with him.
Yeah, Trey was a big supporter of me during my recruitment, and it was just a great time talking to him about NDSU and the Bison, and he always nagged me a little bit. He's like, you need to come join the Bison with me, and he was really happy today when I told him I made my decision to join the Bison.
What was your contact like with North Dakota State? Did you camp up here? Had you been on visits, or what kind of was the whole – how'd the ball get rolling with you?
I started talking to NDSU then in my junior year, and they invited me up to a game. And I kind of just started on. And I actually went to camp the previous year before my junior year, and then I went to camp after my junior year, and that's when Coach Entz offered me. And then we waited till now to decide, but it's just been a blessed to have a relationship with the NDSU coaches, and they've all been amazing to me.
What was kind of the rest of your recruitment like? Where else did you have offers from, and where else were you maybe interested in going?
My first Division I offer came in the spring from Northern Iowa. And they had pulled my offer in the summer, which was kind of a disappointing part of my recruitment. But then after that, I got Division II offers from Augustana, Northwest Missouri, SMSU, Concordia, St. Paul. Then I went up to NDSU's camp, and they offered me up there. And that was an exciting time. And then I also had an official visit at SDSU this past weekend, and they offered me to.
So what was it about this weekend or your time up at North Dakota State where you just decided, you know what, it's time to pull the trigger?
Every time I go off to NDSU, it just feels like home to me, and it's just a special place. And they're always a little bit better at everything than everyone else, and it just felt like home to me.
Which coaches were the kind of the key guys in your recruitment?
Coach Larson recruited me a lot, and he recruited me hard. I talked to almost every single defensive person on the staff, which was nice, and they all were just like, we need you to be a part of this Bison family, and it just made me feel like they wanted me, you know.
Do you think Trey's going to lobby to move you over to the offensive side of the ball, or is he going to be pretty happy that you're going to be coming after him in practice?
Oh, I'm not sure. He might try and give me the offense, but I already told him today I'm going to be coming at you in practice.
Yeah, they put that red jersey on him, though.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts as far as the positional change, having maybe not done some of the things that they're going to ask you to do at North Dakota State in high school? Do you run kind of maybe a more of an odd front where you are rushing, maybe not with your hand on the ground, but are you rushing the quarterback a little bit? Or are you kind of engaged in the line of scrimmage, or are you pretty much an off-the-ball linebacker right now?
I'm an off-the-ball linebacker right now, but we do have a blitz package in where I come off the edge, which has been fun to run. Coach Buda did an amazing job at camp with me, just explaining the DN position, and he made me feel really comfortable with it, so I'm not worried at all about the transition from linebacker to DN.
Any final word, anything else you'd like to say to Bison Nation?
I'm ready to be a part of the herd. Roll herd, baby.
All right, we want to thank Trey for his time. That was awesome. I think something that Bison fans are certainly going to enjoy getting to hear from a future Bison, somebody that has made the decision to be a part of the program. And you know, like we mentioned, the recruiting process is pretty thin right now. The Bison got a lot of their key guys to commit early. They don't have a big senior class, which means they don't have a huge incoming freshman class. And right now, they are doing a lot of just holding on. And Trevor talked a couple shows ago about, kind of how the recruiting process changes a little bit once you've committed. And guys are still in your school and still making sure that you know you're a part of the family and things like that. And that process obviously is now beginning for young Mr. Steinbach. Let's dive in, and I'm going to bring on now our lead football analyst, fresh off of laying his beautiful daughter down for sleep. Trevor Gebhardt, how are we doing?
We're in a 12 jersey. We got the Lions tonight. I'm doing pretty good right now, and I'll be great after a Packers W.
Yeah, that was a rough one for Carson and the boys yesterday. That is for sure. So you and I are hoping for a continued weekend of green and gold excellence. Certainly one thing that we were hoping for it, but one thing that we discussed prior to the game was the lack of teeth in the rivalry, that there weren't any kids on North Dakota State's roster that even knew what it was to lose to the Panthers. 46-14 is not going to help, is it?
I mean, you've got basically a whole class of kids now going through a redshirt year, through a senior season, not having a, other than the 2015 game when they would have been redshirting, really much of a challenge from the Panthers. I'm hesitant to say that the tides have turned away from that rivalry. I mean, I still think it's existent to an extent, but as far as the guys wearing the shoulder pads, this group is going to go through a whole half a decade without even really thinking much of it, because what we experienced back in, quote unquote, back in my day was quite a bit different from the Panthers. But and talents shift, times change, and I guess we'll see what happens in the next half a decade coming up here. But results like the last 2 years are quite frankly not going to help things as far as bitterness towards each other.
No, the competitive part of that process, I think, is something that has not quite gotten to UND levels, but is something that needs, you know, North Dakota State has to have something taken from them by UNI before I think you're going to see a lot of the getting up for that game that used to go on, you know, after the minus 40 yard game or the close call in 13, certainly the loss down there in 14. The vitriol, and we'll talk about how many points they've given up in the last two meetings, is a little bit gone. I want to dive back into your area of expertise, Trev, and talk about two absolute stone-cold studs in sophomores, Phoenix Sproles and Christian Watson. They had another big-time game. I wrote in my game preview that it might be time to let these guys eat. Turns out I was wrong about half of that. It was not necessary to let these guys eat. I mentioned that with the 2.4 yards per carry given up by UNI, maybe running the football was not going to go all that well. It went just fine, thanks. But letting Phoenix and Christian eat a little bit, that didn't hurt either.
Well, no. I mean, the product on the field that a lot of people see, notice, and remember is their touchdowns. The athleticness and all that stuff is great, fine, and dandy, and I absolutely love it. It just basically reiterates the feeling that I have after I watched the Butler game that I wouldn't be recruited in this day and age. But I'm all for it because that's how the program gets better. But the thing that I took away was one of the touchdown runs. It was on the NDSU sideline. The very end of that play, Jimmy Kapores threw in, can't remember who scored, but he threw him into the end zone. But the block,
the Cofield touchdown.
Yeah, the Cofield touchdown. Was Christian Watson. On the right hand side, if you watch the finish in that play, it's absolutely tremendous. And that is exactly what I had talked about in the preseason that was necessary from that group to strike fear into Missouri Valley opponents. They're doing it and they're relishing off it thoroughly. And I firmly believe that's why they're getting open all the time, is because when it's not a pass play, they're making you pay. If they see you on your heels at all, they will put their hands on you and they will drive you backwards and they will find ways to demoralize you. And that happens in the run game. So proud of those guys. It's fun to see. And the fact that they're so young makes it that much more impressive.
Yeah, for sure. These are two guys that are, you know, leading a group of men in their second and third years in the program. And a lot of time, you know, you see that kind of thing from older players than that. But fortunately, the leadership that they're providing matches up with their talent level. And I think that's a big deal. If NDSU, you know, was really struggling to throw the ball because they had inefficient young pass catchers that needed a little bit more seasoning, it would be one thing, but these guys are kind of kicking ass and taking names. So I think when they get up in front of the room and lead, it means a little bit more. I know one that Trey, and he's admitted this, is thinking about again, though, is that flea flicker. What a call by Coach Roll. What a route by Christian, and just too much air under the ball
five. If he leads him, I mean, that's getting six. Very proud of Ty and the game that he called, and I tweeted out after that first drive. Preparation was the key to success for me in this game. I wrote about it in my pregame analysis, and the OC was definitely dialed in, because that first drive that he called, even outside of that flea flicker and the timing of it, I feel like he took a step forward this week. That's not to say that he wasn't doing a good job before, but there were things that I noticed in that first drive of T-Roll mixing it up in the old diesel. Definitely taking a step forward in his play calling.
Yeah, he's really been excellent, I think. And that's not just, you know, me kissing up to a coach. I mean, it's legitimate. And It's something that Matt Entz made a point to mention in the post-game press conference after the UNI victory, and something that I asked him to talk about yet again on Monday. And one thing that he specifically mentioned was just how good he thought that the script that Tyler and the rest of the offensive coaches were coming up with for the beginning of the games and the fast starts that NDSU has been getting off to week after week has a lot to do with those 12 or 15 plays that if they're kept on schedule, you know, are going to result in touchdowns. And they've been doing a really, really good job of staying on schedule. One kid that I have to make mention of that I think is getting better and better each week, even though a ton is put on his plate. Matt Entz said he probably gets more reps in practice than any other player because he is playing strong safety and will linebacker. And the way that teams are attacking them right now calls for him to play way more will in the games, but he's not a lot, you know, he's not a linebacker. They haven't moved him there yet. He is probably, I would guess, the second string strong, you know, where Dawson Weber is the second string free. And that's James Kaiser, a guy that, you know, I pointed out one play on Twitter, and hopefully I'll get the with the Packers game really screws everything up. But I know that alienates about 60% of our fans. I'm going to try and get some the film review up. But what I really like about James is the understanding that when he is playing linebacker, he does need to make himself a small target and not allow himself to get squirted out by centers and guards, because at 205 pounds, which I think might be a slightly generous measurement, at 205 pounds, it's just not going to go well for him. He needs to be able to, you know, attack small parts of offensive linemen and maybe not touch them at all. And that's where I think you saw in his tackle for loss, and what I think you've seen as he progresses over and over against the spread run game. And I think he's really been helpful in closing some stuff down over the middle. And over the middle, I think, is one area of concern. And I want to know if you've noticed it as well. But that's that Jackson Hankey needs to get on his horse and drop. The kid has shown, I think, all season long that he can run, and especially run downhill. But you played with a guy, war number 49, that seemed to be able to get on his horse and drop into passing lanes and make interceptions and make big time plays. You saw a touchdown from Northern Iowa deep over the middle, and you saw a dropped touchdown from Northern Iowa deep over the middle. If you're going to play cover two, the Mike has to get on his horse and drop, right?
Trying to accomplish typically in this defense, yes, because you're disguising it as a cover three with the guy playing one high and that linebacker getting on his horse, like you mentioned. And just making things a little bit more difficult. Now, I don't know exactly what was called. You know, I don't review the tape to the same extent that you have access to, but it'd be interesting to see exactly what his alignment assignment is. But I'm sure that's something that if they do notice, and that is something that they need to cover, it will, because at some point in a defensive scheme, no matter what you're doing, you're going to have a weak spot. Now, is that a deal where that was planned for this week? I have no idea. It could have been a case where they said, okay, McElmain, we're going to force you to beat us in the middle of the field here because you've been unsuccessful, you know, whatever the percentage may be throughout the course of the season. You notice that you mentioned it, the Eagles game. The Eagles wanted, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on his name here, the $84 million man. They wanted him to beat him, and he did. So sometimes giving things up can cost you. And fortunately for NDSU, that wasn't the case here, if that's what they were trying to accomplish. But if it is a spot of improvement when it comes to getting on your horse, that certainly needs to be addressed as well, because come playoff time, it'll just get exploited every series. So not sure the exact reason, but luckily for NDSU on Saturday, it wasn't a detrimental deal.
No, and ultimately, like I said, it was one touchdown and one touchdown drop. The reason, you know, that I'm not trying to pick on Hankey, but that I kind of figured it was Hankey, is because he was in trail position on both. He, you know, if you want to call it gotten beat, he got beat. That, you know, the tight end was back behind him. He was chasing after him, and one catch, one drop. Could have been 14 points. Thankful, obviously, that it ended up being 7. One guy that did not have a lot of issues and is really turning into a big-time player. And I've noticed guys are even almost throwing at Marquise Bridges. I mean, I think it's become pretty obvious that Destin Talbert is the favorite target, and he's a good player, but I mean, he's just the lesser of three evils there. Man, nobody's really throwing it at Josh Hayes. Congratulations to Josh. Of course, I'm becoming a dad. That happened, I think, last week, and he talked about that a little bit, but he absolutely drilled Deion McShane and did so in a way that did not incur a penalty. And in today's day and age, it is so hard to execute a hit of that magnitude and jar the ball loose without a yellow flag popping up. I was really, really impressed with that single play from Josh. And I've been almost seeing him as sort of a CJ Smith type of shutdown guy in that you don't see a ton of play on the ball like you do with Marquise, but there just aren't a lot of plays.
Yeah,
given
let me
up
tell
by
you, you have, I mean, what, he had six tackles, second on the team in tackles behind Kaser, three pass breakups and a forced fumble. I mean, that's a solid day in of itself. On top of that, a highlight reel type hit. Certainly a guy that stood out. He was all over the field. It's encouraging to see because you got a guy kind of stepping up and playing, you know, a CJ Smith and Trey Dempsey type role where he can be more of your energizer bunny by making so many plays all the time. So he seemed to find himself in the right spot at the right time. That's just smart football and very athletic football when you're doing it in a multitude of ways, not just pass breakups or not just the forced fumble. He's doing it in every capacity. So kudos to him on and off the field, becoming a father. There's nothing better. So congratulations, Josh. And hope that continues to translate into more success on the field.
And I want to kind of have you take us behind the curtain a little bit, as we often have you do. 18-14 at halftime. Looks like, you know, a little bit of a scrap, maybe a little bit of a dogfight. I want you to kind of let us know what the halftime adjustments sound like from a player's perspective. What's going on? Is everybody kind of listening to the head coach? Are you broken down into your position groups? I don't need you to give away any trade secrets, but just kind of what's that like? Because what an incredible set of halftime adjustments by this coaching staff to be up 18-14 at the half and then finish the game with a score of 46-14. I mean, we're talking about a 28-0 outburst in the second half.
So the basis of everything
kind of
starts in the winter. So about, you know, fortunately, about, you know, a week or two after Frisco, everyone's back hitting the weights, and our progression into the season through the summer and into fall camp, our conditioning is second to none. I firmly believe that. The players believe that. And at this point, it's not a secret to the Bison's success is Jim Kramer. So that in of itself gives us a leg up in the fact that we know that we're better conditioned for the second half. So that's the start of it. Really how it's broken out is we come in, I don't know how it's done now, but back in my day, the head ball coach would kind of give some pointers where he thought we were at. And then you'd break out into position groups and you would give feedback to your position coach on how you thought things were going. So for example, when we were playing the Sam Houston States and Georgia Southerns of the world, we knew we weren't going to beat them downfield a lot just for a simple speed factor. We would get a speed gauge on them. We'd get an idea of how they were with their hands coming off the ball. And even just some crossing routes, feeling like we could lose guys in traffic. Understanding football guys, so to speak. So if you're going against guys that seem to always be in the wrong spot at the wrong time, you just kind of feel that out and exploit it in the second half. And that's what we were tremendous at doing. Any mental weaknesses that you thought that they might have? It's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. You really just kind of feel them out, and the second half you exploit it. So 18-14, it is what it is. You kind of know what's going to happen. You've seen it 1,000 times by now, but we fully anticipate everybody's best punch in the first half, and we know that the second half is where we make our hay. And as long as we don't dig too big of a hole, which I really don't recall a time that we have. You just basically go after their weakness and tendencies that haven't been successful. So nothing really groundbreaking there, but that's just what we did on a week-to-week basis, and it's a formula that just seems to work. And obviously it resulted in a 30-point blowout.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a completely different team coming out of halftime, and just something that, man, I just wanted to know kind of what the nuts and bolts of those adjustments in, because you're right. And again, some of it and a lot of it, frankly, I think goes to Coach Kramer and goes to just the unbelievable condition that these athletes are in and that you guys were in when you played. You just had better, you have more legs in the fourth quarter. And I think anybody could see that. I think that was an issue over and over and over again for opposing teams. But at some point, the X's and O's matter and the players, you know, matter as well, not just, who's in better shape. So something I wanted to touch on. It was nice to see my guy Lane Tucker get in. Lane was the top-ranked recruit out of the state of Wyoming his year. North Dakota State picked up a commitment from Lane over Craig Bohl and the Cowboys, got him to come to North Dakota State, and has really been one of the top-touted interior defensive linemen to choose North Dakota State. Had a little bit of a groin injury in fall camp and is finally kind of recovering and starting to get some snaps. And as a guy that I'm really excited about from a potential standpoint, I'd like to see him get some more snaps. Certainly fresh defensive tackle bodies are worth their weight in gold. That is for sure. 102 points, Trev. 102 points is how many points Northern Iowa has allowed to North Dakota State over the last two meetings. How difficult is that for you to wrap your head around, considering the all-out wars you guys got into with the Panthers?
It makes me a little jealous, to be honest with you. I mean, I wish we could have racked up that many points. We had, maybe a little bit different style where we just kind of had the ball for 7 to 10 minutes every time we had a drive. We were efficient. We'd score. But we weren't going to score in bunches. And pretty simple way to break it down is they have guys all around that are more athletic. We've talked about it through text and through phone calls and whatever, but they have four guys that can rush for over 100 yards at any given time. You got guys that have speed and athleticism like Phoenix and Christian Watson and multiple guys to be able to spill them and allow their bodies to recover. So when they're called on big plays, they can go execute. And it's fun to see. It doesn't hurt when you have guys like 12 and 5 taking snaps the last 2 years. So those aren't exactly easy to game plan for, because what do you do? Like, what exactly do you do to stop it? Do you take away one aspect of the game, put a spy on them, and hope they beat you with their arm? Well, good luck, because they will. Or do you drop five into coverage and play nickel and try to blitz them and, hopefully that their athleticism isn't on that day? Well, if you do that, good luck, So, I don't know, as an offensive guy, it's fun to see that we're now putting a bunch of points on the board, whereas back in the day, we'd score upper 20s and lower 30s and we wouldn't allow 20 points. Well, that's a pretty easy formula to win. So, but if you can explode for 50 plus or right at 50, I'm all for that too, especially when you got a defense as good as this is. So it's just a fun group to watch. Really athletic. And it's cool that they're going to have even more years together.
Yeah, and that's one of the underrated things I think about this team is just how many years they have left together and how scary they might be in the future. I'm working on something too. Coach Kleiman made a comment that, North Dakota State might be a deeper talent-wise roster just because, he was there and recruited for 8 years. And it's not all Kleiman and Jacobs, but they had a big part in it. Coach Entz, Coach Roll, Coach Hedberg. There were a lot of guys that built this really, really talented group of young men and continued to raise the recruiting profile, and you're seeing it. Each wave of Bison is maybe not better, but they're bigger, stronger, and faster than the Bison that came before them in this Division I kind of role. I think of even a guy like Joe Mays, who was 5'10", and all of the corners on that team, they're very good players, but they're 5'9", 5'9 and a half. Your David Earls, Nate Agbatolas, guys that weren't deemed to be tall enough to play Texas college football, came up to North Dakota State and won a ton of games. But it was a lot of winning with Davids against Goliath, and now NDSU is Goliath, and it's something to behold. Certainly, I will tell you that even from, you know, 2013 when I started covering the team, 2014. Just being around the facility, being around the locker room, these are bigger dudes. They're scarier dudes. They're more intimidating. They're certainly nice young men, but I mean, just walking off the bus, these are some absolute monsters. There's no question about it. 2 weeks ago, Trev, we had a pod, and you mentioned that this Missouri State game was the game that you were most concerned about. And this almost never happens, but the advanced numbers from the Massey ratings actually give North Dakota State a 100% chance to win the game. This will be as wide of a spread as Butler. It'll be as wide as a spread as any of the games that they've played up to this point. But it was the game that you pointed out gave you the most concern. And it's something that I brought up in today's press conference. I asked Matt, what do you do? And I didn't give a number, but I basically said, you know, you're going to be 50-point favorites. You're going to be 48-point favorites. How do you get to a point where you don't let something weird happen? And he said he was going to show the Indiana State tape, and he was going to show the South Dakota tape and make sure that these guys understood they weren't invincible. Are you still kind of nervous, or what's a week like that? What were those weeks like when those letdowns did come?
To be quite honest with you, I mean, the Indiana State game in 12, we had just come off probably our most impressive victory throughout the start of these championship runs to date. At that point, Youngstown had beaten Pitt. Pitt, of course, took Notre Dame into triple overtime and ended up losing, and Notre Dame went to the national championship that year. So we knew it was no secret that Youngstown State was a very, very talented football team, and we basically bolt raced them out of the Fargo Dome in the first 17 minutes of the game. And the next week, we go and lose to Indiana State, and that just goes to show you that any given Saturday, anything can happen. You know, we've mentioned time and time again, you know, it's a little bit different group of cats putting on the shoulder pads now. I mean, because if you go back and look at some of the scores in 2012, we didn't win by a lot in quite a few of those games, even throughout the playoffs. So, you know, fortunately, the week after Indiana State, we started our 33-game win streak at Howard Wood Field. I guess shout out to my old high school stomping grounds there. But it's definitely a trap game. You saw it when they played USD in 2015. Youngstown State in 2011, it was a little bit later in the year. But these team, Youngstown was probably better than Missouri State, but you get these teams that just aren't quite up to snuff. It's scary because you got a team the following week that you are basically drooling over to go and beat them to a pulp, to put it lightly. So when you're looking forward to that and you got that to look forward to, it's very easily to get caught up in it. It's very easily to get caught up in the emotions of big wins like smacking Northern Iowa in the mouth. So it seems like this group is very mature, and it seems like they learn and can learn from past mistakes. By no means necessary will I pick Missouri State to win this. I think that would be absolutely absurd. But if it was something where it was, you know, a 28-21 game late in the third, you know, you kind of know why. I think it would take more than an act of Congress for Missouri State to actually come out with a win. The 100% thing scares me because I don't think anything's ever guaranteed to that nature, but these guys need to be prepared and basically make sure history doesn't repeat itself so they don't find themselves tied for the conference lead with a couple other programs, because you very easily can if you let your guard down.
All right, man. Thanks for hey, Trev, thanks for your time on a Monday trying to get this thing done before the Packers play. Folks, thank you guys for listening, especially if you've lasted all the way to the end of the show. We appreciate you listening to the whole thing, that is for sure. If there is any way that you guys can support Trevor and I in this venture, the number one way is to become a VIP member over at Bison Report. You're going to get the top recruiting info in the market easily. You're going to get the only real film study, X's and O's type stuff, insider info from Trevor, insider info from Nate. We just you know, we give the people what they want. That's what we're about at the Bison Report. And right now, you can give us a 30-day shot for a dollar. If you don't like what you see, cancel. You're out a buck. I've said this before. Come find me in the tailgate lot before the game. I'm hanging out with my family usually. I will give you a dollar. I promise. I will. I'll refund it if it was really that bad. Otherwise, we're doing 30% off of a annual subscription right now. That really gets you down to $5-6 a month, and we're going to, I promise, return that much value to you. I absolutely promise that. Thanks, Trevor, one more time for your time, and go Bison.